Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour, or 26 till, either way you want to look at it. My father was a railroader, and he made me say time the way railroaders say it, and they never say anything till. It's always after the hour. That's the way the railroads run. And so that's what, the reason I say it that way, but also because it's easier for me to read without having to do the math. Gary Moore is our guest. Oh, by the way, folks, don't forget to check out my website, jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And when you get there, you can also find out more about Gary Moore and our other Brain Trust members, because we got those guys all over the place there. They're everywhere, including Gary Moore. Archives and articles and lots of important things, links to information about his books, which includes Spiritual Investments. This is one of my favorite books, folks, Wall Street Wisdom from the Career of Sir John Templeton, and his new book, Faithful Finances 101. Gary Moore, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back with you, Jim. It's always fun.
It's always a pleasure to have you back, Gary. Well, Gary, the Republicans pulled off the hat trick this week. They got the White House for 4 more years. They picked up a significant increase in the Senate and the House. And the drum roll, please, for the hat trick, they won't have to, Nixon said, Tom Daschle can say, you guys won't have me to kick around anymore. So they don't have Daschle, and they do have an increase significant in the Congress, and they got the White House back. That's the hat trick, isn't it?
Yeah. Right now it looks that way, Jim. There's no question, and I've told you I'm a long-term Republican, but the country faces some serious issues, and of course, whether it in 4 years from now looks like a wonderful thing, because I mean we're accountable now, Jim.
Yeah.
I mean we're responsible. We've got to deliver, and the economy faces some difficult times coming up.
What do you think are some of those difficult things in the economy?
Well, the largest one, of course, is the deficit.
Yeah.
And that's not a debilitating thing. I want to put that in perspective. We're spending, it would be like a family makes that's worth $100,000 a year, deficit spending by $1,000 a year, Jim. We're deficit spending about 1% of our net worth every year. And, you know, you can do that for several years. And sometimes it's even advisable in a very difficult period of health. You know, when your health isn't good, you get cancer, you want to spend some of that wealth. But some could argue that Hussein was a cancer on the world. So it depends on your perspective, okay? But still, economically, you don't want to do that too long.
But there are two kinds of deficits. There are two kinds of deficits. My economist friends tell me I don't think they use the word systemic, but they are the systemic kind. Those are the ones that are basically part of the structural. That's what it is. Structural deficits is what they call it. And those are like the Social Security deficits and some of those. And then you've got the short term deficits, which are the ones you spend when you go to war, that kind of thing. And so the ones that the economists are worried about are the structural deficits.
Yeah, in a way, and in another way, the other kind of deficits, Jim, are even worse. To further our analogy, structural deficits would be like if you had cancer and you knew you were going to have to spend for it. What the deficits are for right now, it would be like if my son got put in jail or had a problem with alcoholism. It's something that we hoped would not happen. It's a part of life, and it has to be dealt with. But we sort of, if I know that my retirement is coming up, I'm a good analogy, I guess. I have a senior in high school right now. And if I knew that I, for example, have the prostate cancer that got my father, I don't want to be spending money right now rehabilitating him from alcoholism or whatever. And so it's a little bit that way. People ask me, I wasn't all that concerned about the debt back 10 years ago.
Well, you weren't that concerned 3 or 4 years ago, because on this show, you told everybody to quit wringing their hands. In fact, I remember you on this show, you said, look, guys, we owe $5 trillion and we own $55 trillion.
That's exactly right. And this week I've done some more research with the Federal Reserve, and I've upped the number. That $55 trillion was actually back 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And today, our assets at a very minimum are probably $80 to $90 trillion.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's not a...
the deficit the debt is like $7 trillion.
It is $7 trillion, and we're also 10 years closer to the period when we'll have to borrow some serious money. It's a good analogy. Again, we're 10 years closer to my retirement, Jim.
you're not gonna wait that long. I know you. You're gonna be retired in 6 months. Stand by, 22. We're gonna be right back with our good friend, Mr. Gary Moore, the author of Faithful Finances 101. It's 39 after 22. Stay with us. There's a minute gone there in the middle. I know, folks, but don't worry about it. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Well, I was moving down the road in my V8 Ford. I had a shine on my boots. I had my sideburns low with my New York brim.
We're back. It's 17-10. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for joining us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Gary Moore is our guest. He's the author of Spiritual Investments and Faithful Finances 101. And Gary, you help people with ethical investing, don't you?
Yeah, or spiritual investing.
Spiritual investing.
That's more of my focus. We try to take the fear and greed out of things, Jim, right, and just be prudent. Markets move between fear and greed, and both of them will get you. And the key is, in 99, as we learned from Sir John, is don't get overly excited. And he has an old saying, I began a book with it one time, as an investment advisor, I can't afford to be an optimist or a pessimist. I have to be a realist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way of putting it, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What do you think? Now, the markets seemed to like yesterday, the markets seemed to like the results of the election.
Yeah, but if it had been, I think honestly there would have been a bounce if there would have been any clear winner. There was the hedge.
We just needed some relief, didn't we?
Well, the hedges were shorting the market in anticipation of another 2000, and markets hate uncertainty, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And there would have been some short covering yesterday, probably in either event. And from now on, it'll be important to see. I just read an analysis. My local paper called me for an analysis yesterday, and I was just reading all the disparate views between Ned Davis and Bob Stovall, myself, and so on down here, who are locals, and there just is no real strong consensus. So I'm just I'm not changing anything due to the election. I'm just continuing to bet on a weak dollar and a sideways market, and nothing really changed for me yesterday.
Over the next 4 years, what do you think, if you're an investor, what do you recommend over the next 4 years?
I think the number one thing that should happen, Jim, and in economics we can only talk about what should happen, we can't talk about what will happen, but economic fundamentals, the value of the dollar, Jim, is the country's credit rating. It's the easy way to understand it. And I don't think country's going broke, bankrupt, any of that nonsense, but as we continue to run these deficits for a while, the credit rating needs to drop, and the dollar probably needs to drop 20-30%.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The Economist magazine is calling for it. I mean, we need it.
Hmm.
But it could take years to do that. And frankly, people here in the States won't even notice it unless you splurge on it.
Well, it'll be good. It'll be good for our balance of trade.
Oh, the corporate guys want it really bad.
Well, because it'll make our stuff cheaper abroad that we make here.
That's exactly right.
It'll also impact. The lower the dollar goes, it'll also impact our standard of living, because consumers, American consumers, benefit from cheap things coming in.
And that's correct. But what the deficits are telling you, Jim, is that we need a correction in the standard of living. There's two ways of getting that, the slow and easy way, which is the drop in the dollar, or just have a real stiff recession.
Yeah, we don't need that.
No.
I vote against the second one.
Well, and that's why I'm voting for the first one and hoping that the guys can pull it off. I thought the dollar has been dropping. I thought that's the way we were headed. But I'll tell you, the way Treasury bond yields went, you know, Treasury bonds are the ultimate recession or depression investment, Jim. And for the last few months, it's been signaling that we could have a very serious recession, except I think a lot of it has to do with the election. Politicians do what they can in the short term, and they can affect interest rates in the short term, you know, for political purposes and so on. It'll be interesting now to watch interest rates and the dollar. You know, Bill Gross of PIMCO is saying that interest rates should be substantially higher, which is an unusual thing for a bond manager to say, so you have to take him seriously. And it's going to be an interesting period, I think.
What do you think about oil prices?
In the short run, may have a a little fluff in them, but in the long run, the demand of the developing countries coming on stream. In my investing, most of the stocks I own are in the developing countries, Jim, and because you know their standards of living, like China lives on $5,000 per person, where we have $42,000 per family. And they need to come on some more over the coming years. And you know, Sir John was predicting that years ago, telling stories about what China coming on stream would mean. And
but you know,
that's happening.
But you know, Gary, I was talking to that question of Richard DeCaser, who's chief economist for the National City Bank, and he said that because I pointed out what you just said, I said, well, the reason the prices are so high is because we've got such an we're upside down in our supply and demand. We got too much demand, not enough supply. And he said, you know what? He said, Jim, you were right the first half of the year. He said, but now it's mostly the prices are being held up by speculators.
Oh, I think that's true. That's what I was saying. There's some fluff in it, and we
saw
that.
So when the speculators get out, will the prices come? Or when they when things settle down a little bit, maybe in the Middle East, which I think that it will, and I think 2005 we'll see that. But when things settle down a little bit and the speculators maybe go somewhere else, will that cause prices to come down?
Well, it already is. You know, the oil plunge, for example, the day before the election.
Right.
You know, there was a saying on Wall Street, the oil above 50, Kerry wins, oil below 50, Bush wins. And during the day before the election,
it was below 50.
Oil dipped below 50 and then just rose slightly above it. And it was almost like the price of oil was signaling the election.
Here's another thing about high oil prices. You know, there's plenty of oil in the ground, but it's deeper in the ground than where we're currently drilling.
That's
and
correct.
In order to go after that more expensive oil, the oil companies have to be getting more for their oil in order to go after that oil. And of course, to me, Gary, and you know, I'm not a greenie, but I think we got to start looking at alternative fuels pretty heavily.
No question.
We got to do that. And folks, before I die, which I hope is a long way away, I'd like to think that maybe we're getting around differently than in an automobile, maybe a transporter like on Star Trek. I'd like that. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend Gary Moore. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Gary Moore is our guest. Gary, give us your website, please.
Financialseminary.org.
Financialseminary.org. What do we find when we get there?
All kinds of stuff. My latest ramblings and delusions about the stock market, mutual funds that don't invest in stuff you might not approve of, all kinds of stuff.
Gary, I want to change subject for just a little bit of a change, but not too much of a change.
All right.
Consider yourself to be an evangelical Christian?
Yes and no, Jim. Evangelical, yes. I'm a Christian, yes. I go to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Right.
And all that means, Jim, is I don't mind telling you about the good news of this guy I know is Jesus, okay? That's all it means.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because one of the things that a lot of my friends in the Democrat Party are worried about
yep.
are evangelical Christians. It comes up over and over. My Jewish friends are worried about them, who are Democrats. Not all Jews are Democrats, by the way, as you know. I have many, many Jewish friends who are Republicans.
Yeah.
But a lot of Democrats are really worried. They're more worried about the evangelical Christians in the next 4 years than they are about Al-Qaeda.
Well, they don't understand this.
Well, tell them. I'd like now. I'm a Christian, but I don't consider myself to be an evangelical. But the point, what I tell them is, guys, I don't think you need to be that worried about evangelicals. They're not the problem. But I'd like your thoughts on that, because I think this is something that needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
Soon to get people to quit worrying about this and worrying about real dangers like terrorism.
Well, Jim, I'm going to have to pull a John Kerry here and give you a nuanced answer. When it comes to evangelical Christians, I see them on a spectrum, okay? And what it's all about is what we call certainty of belief. One of the defining characteristics of evangelicals, as most people perceive them, conservative right-wing Christians, for example, is their certainty of belief. Now, what I tell them is that if they're certain of their salvation, which is what certainty of belief should be about, that's all fine, well and good. Okay, I don't share it that strong. I think there'll be a judgment day when I just pray that I'm going to squeeze through the eye of the needle mm-hmm. by God's grace. Okay, but evangelicals, the right wing, believes that you can know down here deep in your heart that you are saved for all of eternity. Now, the problem comes, as the New York Times article not long ago said, the Insert magazine, that when evangelicals such as George Bush gets to the point where they believe that they can be quite certain about, for example, the federal debt 10 years ago, mm-hmm. that they read a passage in the Bible that says the servant or the borrower is the servant of the lender, for example, and they know with certainty that that means the federal debt is going to sink America. Now, that, in my book, is crossing the line and usurping God's omniscience. In other words, we as mortals cannot be omniscient about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are leveling the charge at George because one of the inputs, he listens to his cabinet, he listens to Colin Powell and so on, but one of the decision-making processes, it's about how you know things. The world, particularly liberals, like to know things purely from the human reason. What Christianity says is you should add church tradition in some cases, and particularly the scriptures. And because George Bush says, I filter through not only the reason of Colin Powell and Condi Rice and so on, but also my readings in the Bible, okay, then that frightens them.
Well, I think another thing that frightens them, Gary, is they think that evangelicals are intolerant. And what I tell them is, you know, the people who claim to speak for evangelicals, they sound intolerant, but I believe the people they represent, they claim to represent, are not nearly as intolerant.
No,
much intolerance in the Christian community, to me, as a lot of liberals think that there are.
No, let me give a different perspective.
Well, you got 30 seconds.
Well, I was put in the evangelical subculture 10 years ago and got real familiar with it, I think, because my publisher is an evangelical publisher.
Right.
Evangelical Christians are intolerant, but they're no more intolerant than everybody else in the world.
Okay? Well, maybe I'm thinking of myself because, as I said, I'm not an evangelical in the way that a lot of people think of that, but I do think I'm a pretty tolerant person. And most of the people I know are intolerant, who are Christians. Gary, I got to wrap it up. Give us your website one more time.
Financialseminary.org.
And the book is Faithful Finances 101. That's the new one. But if you get a chance to find this one, Spiritual Investments by Gary Moore, don't miss a chance to buy that one. It's a wonderful book. Thank you, Gary. Good to see you.
Take care, buddy.
Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll be right back with Joan Pride.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.